20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. It is Tuesday. You know what that means. We are lucky enough to be joined by Justice Mosqueda. You can find me on acmepackingcompany.com and, of course, at JUMOSQ on social media. Justice, great to be back chatting with you. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great.
I would not have it any other way. Your Portland Trail Blazers are not in the playoff race. I know, right? Life is good. Did you do a bracket? How's your bracket doing?
I didn't do a bracket. My girlfriend, Addie, did a bracket. She gets super excited about it every year because she ends up beating everyone. I told her this year, I was like, just follow what KenPom does. She goes, isn't this cheating? She filled it out. Last we checked this morning, yeah, there haven't been games today.
Nope.
She was 99.5 percentile, had all the winners from the Sweet 16, all the winners from the Elite Eight. She hasn't watched a basketball game all season. Doesn't really like sports unless it's in person, and then it's for the snacks. But
the beauty of college basketball, nothing better than just filling out a bracket and letting the rest fall where it may. That's amazing. We've got a lot to get into, obviously. League meetings started and kicked off. We had Brian Gutekunst talk. We'll talk about that. Want to get into some of these top 30 visits, and we'll go through a couple Texas wide receivers as well. But let's start there with the league meetings. Goody talked. It seemed like there probably wasn't a whole ton to kind of take away from this. Let me just start there. Is there anything that you got away from? Schneidman had a great article over on The Athletic. Is there anything that you had as a major takeaway from anything that Goody said?
The Jair stuff was very interesting to me.
I'm curious what you thought was interesting about this.
I'll pull up the article that I wrote out about it because I dictated all the words from the Rob Demoski video. So he said, John Thornton of Roc Nation Sports, that I added that, is his agent. We talk weekly about these things and working together on finding the best solution for everybody. We invested a lot in Jair, and we want to make sure that if he's not going to be on our football team helping us win games, then we want something back for that investment. That doesn't sound like they're going to get rid of him for nothing. There's been all the reporting that, you know, they're not going to offer a contract restructure because he's not going to accept a contract restructure. So if you don't find what's out there on the market, does he just come back? I mean, that's a interesting thing, right? I would have thought that the price point would have been what was driving this, and now it kind of seems more like it's on Jaw's side, where Jaw is the one who wants out rather than the Packers wanting off of Jaw. So I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, that piece of it is interesting. Did you see Wilde? I know on his show was talking about how he doesn't think Green Bay is going to get anything in return from Jair Alexander.
I did not. I mean, I'm not super surprised by that, but
yeah, I guess that aspect of it, of him saying we want to get, you know, obviously a return on our investment. I read that, and my initial reading of that was simply, and even when you read it now, my biggest takeaway was still like, oh, he's gone. Like there's no sort of reconcile. Like they're already thinking in past tense of he's not going to be on our football team, so we want to get as much as we can in return, which again, my initial reading of that was more of like, yeah, they want as much as they can get. Of course they do. And they're willing to hold out as long as possible to get that, which we've talked about in the past, right? Like they can go to the draft. If some team didn't get a corner that they wanted, they can go into really training camp. If somebody pops a Achilles or tears an ACL, hey, we've got Jair here. I still can't get myself totally, even I see totally how you're interpreting it. I still can't get myself to find an avenue where Jair is back. And it felt to me more of like, I felt even more convicted that he's not back this season.
I just think the real important thing, if he's not going to be on our football team helping us win games, then we got to get something back for that investment.
Yeah.
Clearly there's not an investment out there.
unless right? some team's maybe. Offering like a conditional seventh and he's playing hardball or something and like they want more.
I guess, but I mean, time's ticking.
Is it though? Like, I mean, to some extent, yes.
Well, the draft's going to happen. So yeah. You're going to get a draft pick this year. So.
Fair. Yeah. I mean, this is also the GM that tried to convince us that Aaron was going to come back after they had already named Jordan the starter and not convince us, but like be like, yeah, there could still be an avenue where Aaron comes back this year after they had already moved on to Jordan. And after Aaron had already talked to the Jets, like, yeah, you know, we would find an avenue. Like, I don't know. I still
well, Mark feel like Murphy spilled the beans on that one.
Yes, that was very Mark Murphy-ish. I'm going to miss those Mark Murphy moments when he's gone, by the way.
If what we want to happen doesn't happen, then yeah, Aaron could be coming back. Just one of the craziest things ever said.
Very much so. I'm going to miss those Mark Murphy moments for sure. Yeah, I don't know. My read on this is still that he's gone and they're just trying to get anything they can in return, which I'm sure is true to some extent. But to your point, if they don't get an offer, like how do they go about reconciling that? So your view of it is still potentially that this is more on like Jair wants out of Green Bay and Green Bay is saying like, yeah, that's fine. We got to get something in return. We're not going to go to you with a contract restructure, but then like at what point does this become like, all right, how do you get to the point where he plays for Green Bay again?
Camp starts. You start finding him if he doesn't show up. I mean, he's not on a rookie deal, so he'll get fine. I can't
get to the point where Green Bay all like wants him to show up to camp if he's disgruntled.
I don't know. Well, OTAs are going to start before the draft.
True.
And he's got like $500,000 on the line for that. So if getting releases on the table, you would certainly want to make that $500,000 ahead of it. So we're talking about him showing up even before the draft if that doesn't get done. So that's, you know, another potential deadline if they see it that way.
Do you think the league meetings accelerate anything here where like Goody's with every other GM, apparently except Mickey Loomis, who's not there, but every other GM and like has the conversations and can actually get like a feel for if there's value there for Jair or not?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's like the combine. I mean, how many times have we seen some of these big trade ups that happen in the draft get finalized around now, right? Where it's, you know, a team is trading up from sixth overall to like second and they're giving up two first round picks. Like a lot of that stuff happens around this time. So, yeah, I mean, anytime you can congregate the league, I definitely think that sort of lubricates conversations for sure.
Hopefully. I think everyone everyone involved, fans, Jair, the Packers, it probably just behooves everyone to get this done sooner rather than later. But I know Goody is willing to be very patient and he has the ability to be patient in this situation. So we'll see, I guess.
I mean, he was the guy who said, you know, he would always talk about like Bakhtiari and giving him a long leash. Cause I think, what was it like Tauscher? One of those guys kept getting hurt. So, I mean, maybe he sees the same thing out of Jair and he's like, I don't want to give up on this player and I don't want to give him away for nothing. So I don't know.
Gut feeling as we sit here right now, what happens to Jair Alexander in 2025?
I still think he gets moved, but it's definitely bumped up the odds of him returning to the team, I think, for sure, because I thought it was pretty much a done deal. I would have thought the Packers were trying to get off of the contract, honestly. And, you know, if they're talking about investments and we need to get something back and all this stuff, they're not looking at the contract as a net zero. So,
no, they are certainly not. I still think he's gone. But to your point, he's still on the roster right now. And they certainly want something in return. If they don't get it, maybe they play hardball the other direction. I'm very, very intrigued to see how this plays out. The other, you know, couple other big things. We got confirmation. Tom Silverstein reported it almost immediately once the Packers signed Aaron Banks that Elton is going to, in fact, move to center. Again, we've talked about this already, but just thoughts on the confirmation from Goody.
Yeah, not shocked. I think the bigger thing was him talking about Jordan Morgan potentially pushing out left tackle. Sure doesn't seem like they are
totally stoked to pay Rashid Walker that like $20 million a year that he's going to end up getting because Dan Moore got it. So I think they're keeping their options open. I mean, I don't know what you do at right tackle. I don't think you move Rashid at right, or I mean right guard. I don't think you move Rashid to right guard. It's interesting because
what's your feel on Sean Ryan?
I don't think they're going to extend him.
You know, like just like as a general player, like what, how do you, what's his
fine?
Fine, yeah.
Fine. He'll probably get like the $10 million per that like
Runyon,
John Runyon Jr. got, but I don't think the Packers are going to pay him and Tom and Walker and Elton and Banks. Like that's that becomes very expensive very quickly.
We were talking yesterday, Grant Bills, Perry Goldstein, and I about Rashid Walker. And like kind of feeling how he fits, like where would you put him amongst left? I don't need you to obviously go through in your head and think of the 32 left tackles in the league, but like around league average, above or below, where would you put Rashid kind of in the general 32 left tackles in the league?
Below for sure.
Yeah.
I would guess just like ballpark, like probably somewhere around like 24th.
Okay.
Not looking at a list, but somewhere around that range. If you compare him to right tackles, he's probably average to above average right tackle. But yeah, I mean, that guy's going to cost $20 million a year. Like the cap is exploding. Yeah. Teams are only going to get even more money. You know, don't want to look too far ahead, but like it was reported this week that like the NFL is basically going to opt out of that. So the way that it works, right? The NFL signed a deal with their television partners through 2030, but they haven't opt out in 2028, 2029. So that like last year is like basically up to them whether they want to accept it. And all indications are they want out because they can get more money. And I think if you're looking at the lay of the land right now, when the NFL is doing things like giving Amazon, you know, 21-day notice to flex games from a Sunday to a Thursday, that's something that they just passed. I think streaming is going to come, and it's going to come with a lot of money because, you know, Fox and CBS and all this stuff is great, but the people who have even more money are Amazon and Apple and all these tech companies. So if nothing else, it's going to drive up the price like crazy.
Yeah. Amazon's going to be a major player in the NFL, I think, for the foreseeable future. Just some of the stuff that they're doing where the ads where it's on your TV and you can just hit click buy and it's based on your, like you're basically your algorithm of everything that you're doing online. Yeah. It's going to be insane. So
I mean, it's why they got the Black Friday games, right? Yeah. Part of it was a deliberate strategy to stop people going to brick and mortar stores on Black Friday. And the Jets were the first team that played on that because New York is the biggest market. Right. I mean,
they know
how this stuff goes. Yeah. I mean, if Amazon had it their way, they would own everything, not just the NFL games. They would own everything in this country. So,
yeah. Yeah. They know what they're doing. I expect Amazon to be very heavily involved in the NFL for the very foreseeable future. And to your point, that's going to mean more money. And yeah, how some of these contracts get done over the course of that time is going to be very interesting as well. But yeah, we had a good conversation on that yesterday. I think he's I would have said probably like the 20th best left tackle is where, just off the top of my head, again, not going through a list or anything like that. So we're not super far off. I think he's still a solid starting left tackle, but I liked him at the end of 2023 a little bit more than I saw last year. Definitely felt like kind of the weak link at times, but it's a contract year. So hopefully he goes out and plays the best ball of his career and maybe even earns a little bit more than that $20 million from some team and bumps that comp pick up, Justice.
Yeah, I mean, the next offseason is going to be nuts. So many of these guys are going to get so much money from, you know, out of Green Bay, whether it's, you know, the Packers or someone in free agency. Like, I think Wyatt's going to probably get something close to the Wharton deal, which is in that ballpark. Quay Walker is going to get 15 per, yep, at least. If Nick Bolton got that, he's going to get it. Zach Tom might reset the right tackle market at this point. I mean, Romeo is probably hoping that he gets the
Khalil Shakir deal, which was like 60 something million, right? Yeah. Over 3 years. So yeah, I mean, it's going to cost a lot to keep this thing together. You know, thankfully the Packers are all on the super low end cash spending this year because they're kind of in like wait and see mode. Next season, they're going to have to start borrowing from the future, which the good news is line goes up, right? For the NFL, cap space is only going to increase, you know, more and more and more because of all the things that we just mentioned with like the television contracts and stuff like that coming up. I think the projection right now is basically like it's good. The cap is going to go up between like 20 million and 25 million every single year. So this past offseason, that jump that just happened, that's happening every year until the new contracts are signed. And then it's going to be an even bigger bump after that, right? So that's just kind of the world that we're living in.
Wait till you get an 18th game, Justice.
Oh, there's going to be an 18th game. I bet they add 2 bye weeks. It'll go from, was it President's Day to Labor Day or whatever it is? Maybe I have it backwards.
Yeah. You said add 2 bye weeks. You mean have 2 bye weeks?
Have two bye weeks.
I was going to say that's a lot of bye weeks. They should already have 2 bye weeks. That's an easy like.
I think they'll tie in the bye week with the international games.
Which makes all the sense in the world. Yeah. Like when you go international, you automatically get a bye the week after it, and then you still have another bye week yet to play with above and beyond that. Yeah, makes all the sense in the world. The only other thing then, I guess a couple others, you know, things that the noteworthy one to me was that Goody said they don't need to go chase pass rushers, that they have enough in-house to be able to continue their pass rush prowess as is, that they are expecting a jump internally. Thoughts on the pass rush and if they need to go chase pass rushers or if this is just line season for an NFL general manager.
Horrendous offseason for Jason Rebovich's public relations. Horrendous.
Yeah, not ideal.
They just basically keep saying like, yeah, it's not the player's fault. So who does that leave? Because you're the front office. You're saying it's not the player's fault. The defense got better.
The scheme got way better.
Yeah, so positional coach that you fired. I think Chase is probably the best way to put it. I don't buy for a bit that they're not looking at the edge market with a fine tooth comb. Yeah. I think the spot that they're picking in is really tough. You know, this gets brought up a lot that like the Packers are picking in the 20s every year and all that stuff. People say it's a good edge class. There's no promise that any of the like the not even like blue chip guys, but like the tier right under that are going to be available at 23. Who says a Shamar Stewart's going to be there? Who says a Mike Green is going to be there? I mean, Michael Williams is probably going to go top 15, and he's not a proven pass rusher. Like, he's a athletic run defender with some upside, and he's tough as nails. He played that 4-eye that, you know, he was basically replaced Trayvon Walker,
right?
Who ended up going first overall. He kind of played in that same role where he's playing inside shoulder of the tackle instead of playing the true edge and stuff like that. But I think they're gathering information. I mean, I don't know if you want to dive into visits and all that stuff right now, but like, they brought 3 of the top guys in. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think if the right one fell to them at 23, they would pull the trigger. I just think the chasing part is the part that's key there because of all, I mean, they still got some needs, right? Like, it's not just defensive end. It's, they could still add speed at receiver. It's, what does their long-term outlook look at like at defensive tackle? It's, you know, what's going to happen with Jair? Do they really think Hobbs and Keyshawn are going to be starting outside corners, or is there a little inkling in their mind that is still like, well, we could play him in the slot. Just like, forget about Bullard. Do you want to get ahead of some of these contracts? Like, you know, you could have 2 potentially vacant. Like, if Sean Ryan wins the right guard competition and Walker wins the left tackle competition. They both become free agents next year. Now you got two holes on the offensive line, yep. right? Do you want to get ahead, plug that up? Like, I think they're in a spot where, you know, people, it's cliche, but like they can just kind of like take best player available for the most part. Like they're going to have to add cornerbacks just to fill out the depth of their roster at some point. But otherwise, like you're kind of in talent adding mode rather than team construction mode, because there's going to be holes that you can plug.
There's a reason why Goody wants more than 8 draft picks, and we've covered multitude of reasons already today. I think one, because you see the cost of these players once they're off their rookie contracts, and it just continues to go to show you how valuable really good players on cheap rookie deals can be for a team. It's stealing money. There's no better resource. I mean, obviously the best of it is if you've got a quarterback, you know, playing on a rookie deal where he's really good, but man, whether you get a Tucker Kraft, a Jaden Reed, a Zach Tom, go on and on playing on cheap rookie deals, it's gold. It's literally the best way to print gold in the NFL. And Green Bay has a lot of them right now. And to your point, a lot of those are going to come up in the very near future. And getting more of those cheap deals with hopefully some very talented players attached to them is going to be very important for this team. And then to your point, they have a cornerback room to fill out. They've got future offensive line needs. They have a linebacker room to fill out at the back end of it. They have defensive end, defensive tackle that they can clearly still upgrade. Wide receiver, Dobbs and Watson are free agents next year. You're really not probably counting on Melton or Heath too much, or Hardman too much. So like there's still going to be a lot of these different positions that Green Bay wants to try to get ahead of, if at all possible. And doing it with 8 picks, 5 of which are on day 3, make that very difficult.
Yeah, for sure. Because, I mean, again, I think there's like 4 pretty big needs, and then or potential needs, I mean, depending on how you see it. Then, you know, DN, D-tackle, corner, and wide receiver. And then, you know, there's some stuff lower down on the line, like you talked about, linebacker, even offensive line depth, cornerback depth. So, yeah, I could see that. But then at the same time, like, they still have all these guys under contract. So, like, they're not screwed if they miss out on a guy. It's just like, oh, yeah. Okay. We didn't get to the future depth of this position this year. We went in a different direction, and that's going to help us moving forward. So, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what they do. I don't think that they're outside of defensive tackle, just because I don't know if Brooks or Wooden are the type of guys that they want, honestly, at defensive tackle. And Kenny disappointed, and Wyatt's on a expiring contract, and it's a really good defensive tackle class. Outside of that, I don't think that there's a single position where I'm like, they're for sure going to draft this on day 1, day 2.
Yeah, defensive tackle feels like the most obvious of all of those. And then I think it's obviously a lot of it's going to be dependent upon what's there, what's on the board when they're actually selecting, and if they move up or down the draft board. Like, all those things are going to be super interesting as well. You mentioned some of the top 30 visits. We're starting to get these names. These are something that are obviously very important to the Packers. They end up usually with a lot of these players, even if it's not via the draft, sometimes via undrafted free agency. Sometimes it's a player that they pick up later. Who was in for a visit, they get drafted somewhere else, they get released and Green Bay picks them up, or even as a free agent down the line. So what do we know about the top 30 visits so far for Green Bay?
Yeah, so first of all, here's just a list of guys. So these are post-pandemic, and the reason why that matters. The 2021 class had a huge amount of busts all across the league. And if you talk to people in the scouting industry, right, what they'll tell you is one of the reasons for the bus was because they weren't able to do the same type of, how should I put this? Like player background work, like not necessarily character, but like work ethic, all those type of things, because people weren't allowed to travel inside of facilities and stuff like that. Right. And a lot of that stuff starts in the spring. So you're talking spring 2021. I know. February 2021, we were just allowed back to help kids, you know, coach and play football. Right. Outside of that, we were like working in pods and stuff like that. You know, we weren't able to like meet as a team. Right. So
That's some perspective. I think after that, the Packers kind of changed their mentality. You know, prior to that, the Packers, you know, especially Ted Thompson, basically used the top 30 visits as, like, he would invite some guys who were, like, character concern type of dudes, right? Like Joe Mixon, when he had all his stuff coming out, like, they brought him in. And then it was basically undrafted free agency recruiting.
Recruiting, yep.
That's kind of how they used it. And, you know, the Packers, I mean, they still do this, right? Like, I think it's still – don't they still have the consecutive streak where it's, like, 20 years or something like that? They've had a UDFA make the team.
Yeah.
But they're, like, the team in terms of, like, no stone left unturned in undrafted free agency. They don't spend a lot of money in it, which is a little bit different than some other teams. You know, they're not going to be the team that gives out the $250,000 signing bonus for a quarterback who's going to get cut in August. But they're definitely looking at it, and they're, you know, the whole visit thing was kind of part of their process. But since then, so this is the last 3 years, here are all the draft picks who they brought in: Devontae Wyatt, Christian Watson, Edgerrin Cooper, Tyrone Hopper, Sean Clifford, Romeo Doubs, Devontae Wicks, or Dontavian Wicks, Ketan Oladapo, Carl Brooks, Tariq Carpenter, Lou Nichols, Rasheed Walker, Samori Toure. They also signed these players as post-draft free agents, as original post-draft free agents. So they picked them up, right?
Yep.
Jameer Johnson, Kadeem Telfort, Cameron McDonald, Donovan Jennings, Omar Brown. Three more players were picked up to their practice squad after they had a stint with another team. That's Benji Franklin, John DeLance, and Jamin Davis. They also got John Fitzpatrick off of a practice squad and picked him up to the 53-man roster, and they claimed Ben Sims off of waivers.
Yep.
That's a lot of names that we're talking about over one. You're limited to the players you have access to, yep, right, that are available. Two, you only have 30 visits, right? So, I mean, the hit rate is pretty high. So if I were a Packers fan, beyond just looking at, like, hey, you know, these guys are generally athletic, or, you know, for, like, offensive linemen, like, guys who are good at agilities, right? Okay. You know, they make your board of potential Packers. Wide receivers who are, you know, some bigger guys who can run decent, right? I think that makes your board because they're looking at a pretty specific type. And then visits. You know, I think the visits can kind of highlight. It's kind of the Packers tipping their hand a little bit. And I think there is a little bit of misdirection. Like, they brought in a bunch of edge rushers the year that they drafted LVN, and they didn't bring in LVN, right? So
yeah.
I think there's some of that too. You know, they bring in a lot of guys coming off of injury, a lot of guys who have character / makeup concerns, right? Like, they brought in, like, Rashee Rice. They brought in George Pickens, and they decided, we don't want those guys. We want to trade up for Christian Watson, right? Yeah. So I think they just kind of, like, cover their bases a little bit, and you never know really what red flags they're actually going to pull the trigger on. Like, Devontae Wyatt was a guy with a red flag coming out. And they actually, you know, selected him. But if they would have liked George Pickens, you probably wouldn't have traded up for Christian Watson, right? Correct. The 2 second-round picks. So I think it's really important to look at kind of the guys that they've brought in on visits at Acme Packing Company. We're going to get full scouting reports on all these guys who are at least, like, the draftable guys. I know there's a bunch of guys that they kind of bring in for, like, the UDFA stuff. I'll get to them later. I don't have time for that right now. But the big ones, you know, three potential first-round picks. They're all at the edge position. Shamar Stewart out of A&M, Michael Williams out of Georgia, James Pierce Jr. out of Tennessee. I don't know if Pierce actually goes in the first round, but he's, you know, being projected there right now. They also brought in Siobhan Revel, who's a very interesting player. He's a guy who is coming off of a non-contact ACL injury for practice. Going to be 24 years old on draft day. Started at a private junior college during the pandemic. I think he played
6 junior college games over 2 years at that JUCO before going up to ECU. And then Isaiah Bond, the wide receiver out of Texas, from what I understand, he is a makeup guy, if you want to put it that way.
Okay.
Nothing crazy in his background. It's not like a violent thing or anything like that. Just kind of a dude who rubs people the wrong way and wears on people a little bit. You know, I know some allegations have come out now, but Jermaine Burton was kind of like a guy like that. And that was a guy that the Packers brought in on a visit last year. He ended up tumbling down the draft, goes to Cincinnati. And it looks like, buddy, he is, someone needs to reach out to that young man because he's about to piss it away.
I don't know if he makes the team this year.
It's not good. I was actually surprised to learn that he was still on the team. So that, if that puts it in perspective, I'm sure there's some sort of like timeline of Jermaine Burton, just like crazy stuff that has happened. Like there was, what was it, the night before a game, he's just like in a casino, like dressed down, like not, yeah, like,
yeah,
not good. Evicted. Again, I can't remember if it was a domestic thing or sexual assault. He was accused of something that was not good involving a woman too. I think the Packers like to cover their asses on some of these players, so they like to bring them in. Yep.
Well, let's talk about Isaiah Bond. We wanted to talk about a couple of these Texas wide receivers today. You know, as we kind of get closer and closer and look at, you know, a position that Green Bay is clearly going to probably have some level of interest in. Had the opportunity to watch both these guys, Matthew Golden and Isaiah Bond. I know you already wrote up a scouting report for Isaiah Bond. I don't know what the likelihood that Matthew Golden is going to be there at 23. Right now, it seems not great. Although I saw a couple of mock drafts where he went like 22 recently. I don't think it's completely out of the realm of possibility. Where do you want to start, with Bond or Golden?
Let's start with Golden because he's going to be the higher ranked guy. I do want to say this, like, Goot and John Eric Sullivan were both at the Texas Pro Day and they still brought in Bond, which one is interesting in and of itself. But if you're looking at the other guy, like, Texas doesn't have that many top prospects. I'm looking at the top 50 right now. They got 3 guys: Kelvin Banks, their left tackle, who's on the smaller side, probably going to kick in the guard. Zach Martin is a very high bar, but like, that's the kind of guard that you're hoping that he could develop into.
Yep.
Very good player, very athletic, all that stuff. Jahdae Barron, who is shooting up draft boards because he is a healthy cornerback, and there's not a lot of those in this draft class. And then Matthew Golden. Those are kind of like the top 50 guys, you know, at Texas.
And so with Golden, let's say, you know, theoretically he gets to 23, or if Green Bay were interested in making a move up, what do you see it like he could bring to the table for Green Bay? How do you see the scouting report for him?
Yeah, so the guy he kind of reminded me a little bit of was Chris Olave. I don't think he's as good as Olave coming out. I think Olave was a little bit better as a separator. Golden did a lot of good things on film. They love to run like so if you know what the WASP route is, right? Like I think Mahomes hit Tyreek on it, you know, during one of the Super Bowls. It was one of those big plays where you're almost taking like a 45 degree angle and then you turn it out to the sideline. Kind of sort of the same thing as like a blaze out. They did a lot of that with him, you know, talented route runner. I don't think he creates as much separation as Olave did, but he's kind of in that same mold. Speedy guy. Quinn Ewers sucks. I wouldn't take him in the top 100 in this draft. If, you know, Bond had been healthy all year and Quinn Ewers had been able to hit these guys in stride, I think both Golden and Bond would have been 1,000-yard receivers.
Yeah.
The way they were beating guys over the top, and it would all of a sudden turn into a contested catch situation,
where it's
frankly embarrassing for Texas.
Correct.
Golden as a blocker, not good. At least he puts effort out there. That's not what I would say about Bond,
who is a terrible blocker. Yeah.
Not interested in wanting to block.
Disinterested.
Yeah, not surprised he rubs people the wrong way when he's quitting on routes early and then not blocking downfield. I think Golden is kind of like a classic Z receiver. Certainly would help
the Packers, you know, as a field stretcher. This guy's incredibly fast, right? Like he ran like a 4.2 something.
4.29. 4.28 or 4.29.
People thought Bond was going to be the faster one out of the two of them.
He looks faster on tape, I thought, personally.
Yeah, Golden is fast, though. Like, I'm not surprised Golden is... I mean, I guess I'm surprised 4.2. But I'm not surprised he ran under a 4.4. Golden was a guy who kind of popped on the radar late, totally frankly. Like, I think he had, like, 600 yards and 600 yards 2 years at Houston. And then he ended up transferring up to Texas. I was looking at actually like a transfer portal ranking this past year, and you know, I don't put too much into the recruiting websites and what they think. But like Golden wasn't like a top 50 recruit or anything sure. like that. So he's kind of a guy who came onto the scene this past season, which is very different than Bond, who, you know, was like the number two receiver at Alabama last year.
With both of these guys, do you see, I know they brought Bond in, it felt like this was maybe more of a, I don't know, will you call it like a character check or whatever. 5'10", right, makeup,
just all that stuff.
Yeah. 5'10", 180 with, again, not blocking on the outside, maybe rubbing some people the wrong way. This does not seem like a very Green Bay Packers-y wide receiver.
Bond, no, but you know, the funny thing is he's taking visits with San Francisco and the Rams too.
Very good in gadget situations, like he's on end around versus screen.
He had four carries, three of them went for 25 plus. Like, I mean, get the ball in his hand. It's very simple. This guy is freaky fast. It's all the other things. And, you know, it is interesting. Like, can you run the Jaden Reed auxiliary plays if one of these receivers is out there blocking for him? Can one of these receivers get the end around if Jaden Reed is out there blocking for him? Like, I think that's where problems kind of arise. Again, I've kind of made this point before. People don't like it. Jaden Reed is kind of your like designated small for now. So unless Matt, like I could see Golden working out for sure.
Yeah.
And totally even good. Bond. Right. But I think the structure of the offense would have to look a little bit different in terms of their spacing. Like I think they would have to spread guys out a little bit more than they do right now. Like all the stack stuff where wide receivers can damn near touch an offensive tackle, right? You can call him a wide out, but like he's still inside the numbers. I think that math changes very quickly if you add one of these guys. Because again, neither of them are good blockers. Golden tries. Pond really like
it's just
we'll try for like a beat and a half, and then after that, a beat and a half, and then after that, that's on you. He's not going to be blocking downfield, looking for work, anything. Like he's buying a ticket. He's watching plays.
He gets beat and a half. It's pretty instantaneous. He is immediately beat, and the ability for him to actually be more than a traffic cone on the outside as a blocker is basically non-existent. You're far better off just taking him and running a nine route with him and hoping like heck that the corner goes with him, or just faking him on an end around and hoping that somebody goes with him, because him as a blocker is again not really doing you any favors whatsoever.
Right, but then what do you do if you're going to be doing the Matt LaFleur stuff where
that's what I mean.
You just run away from him all game, just wherever Bond is, we're running opposite of that. I don't know how that works.
I think this is definitely some due diligence on their end. And again, a lot of this stuff isn't just for 2020 or like this specific draft. You know, they do their due diligence where if he becomes a free agent in 4 years or, if, you know, whatever the case may be, do they have interest in him? If all of a sudden he fails out of whatever team drafts him 2 years from now, like Amari Rodgers did in Green Bay, and he becomes available, do they want to bring him in as a potential, you know, back of the roster guy? Or do they just basically give him as a, no, we don't want to touch this guy no matter what sort of grade? So I would be pretty stunned if Isaiah Bond was a draft pick for Green Bay, but I don't know. I guess crazier things have happened.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely doesn't fit the mold. I mean, they need speed, but all the other things don't seem to add up. I thought Bond, I was kind of surprised he was going in the third in like mock drafts and stuff.
What did you thought higher or low? I'm assuming you thought lower.
Higher.
No, you thought higher. Okay.
Yeah. Just cause like
Like if you're a team that has a bunch of big guys, like if you're the Chargers, right? Just having a field stretcher like that, I think would go a long way. You know, he could be, you know, if he's your designated small, as I'm calling it now, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I texted a guy in the league today. So Steve Palazzolo, PFF Steve, formerly PFF Steve, no longer PFF Steve.
No longer PFF Steve.
Who's, by the way, massive. I don't know if you've seen him, Andy.
He's built like a linebacker, right?
Dude, he's like 6'10".
Oh my God. I didn't realize that tall.
Like, dude, he's like, it's comically tall. It's comically tall when you walk into a bar in Indianapolis and you see him.
That's amazing. You
can spot him from across the room.
Are you sure he's just not on Sam Monson's shoulders? He's not just sitting on PFF.
Aren't we all on Sam Monson's shoulders?
Very true.
That I said that. So Steve Palazzolo, the artist formerly known as PFF Steve, said Isaiah Bond's off the field concerns are, quote, Jermaine Burton territory. Sent that to a guy in the league to try to get some of this stuff confirmed. Texted a couple people. This one that responded to me, just two words. Yeah, comma, sucks. So that gives you any indication on how some people on the other, and I'm not in the business of just trash and kiss the trash kids, but
right. And that's why you do your due diligence.
This is not a secret. So
that's why you do your due diligence, right? Like some of this stuff is easy to just be like, yeah, character concern, red flag, yada, yada, yada. But like, that's why we want to try to find that stuff out. It's like, is it legitimate or is like this just some, like just one dumb report or some team trying to bring his stock down so he falls further in the draft so they can take him? Like,
but by the way, Bond played with Burton at Alabama. And Nick Saban retired the very next season. It was like, yo, I am done with this, dude. I cannot be doing this. This is not my life. So,
well, yeah. Since we're talking about this, another interesting thing that, and I saw you comment on it on social media, the Tet McMillan thing where he's doing an interview. He's eating during the interview, I think. And then he says something like, I don't like watching tape or, you know, whatever the case, and kind of made the rounds a little bit. I'll let you take it from there.
Yeah, so apparently the context that I understand, I didn't watch the whole YouTube video, but people have kind of, you know, they're in your replies and stuff like that, and they correct some things. So it's Tet after, I believe, his freshman season, so he's a 19-year-old, talking about how he's watching all these clips and stuff like that in meetings and all that stuff. And he's like, yeah, I don't watch football outside. Like, I'm going to see all my stuff in these meetings anyway, so I'm not really putting that on my plate, and people are going nuts. There are so many of those players who are playing at a very high level at the NFL. Yeah. Especially those who have had that mentality at that age. Devontae wanted to be a basketball player, guys.
Yeah.
He did not love football. He learned to love football and he learned to do all the veteran things and stuff like that. But yeah, after his freshman season, because Devontae came out as a redshirt sophomore, he was still focused on basketball. He still thought, you know, I'm going to make the Bulldogs, you know, Fresno Bulldogs basketball team, and I'm going to the NBA. That's a lot of these guys. And yeah. That's the thing where it's like people not realizing, like, what is a red flag and not a red flag. A guy not watching a ton of film isn't – that's not – a huge deal. Like, he's showing up to class, he's putting in all this work. Tet McMillan is a guy who's produced for several years. Like, that's not a headache type situation. I mean, frankly, he's right.
Is it more of it, like we hear the Kyler Murray thing all the time, if it's your starting quarterback, is it a bigger issue, or is it dependent on position?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I would think, like, really, like, positions of prevention. So, like, beyond quarterback, like, I think it matters for, like, the offensive line. I think it matters at corner, actually, a good bit more than wide receiver. Like, you want to know where these guys' breaks are, what kind of routes that they're running, right? What's available. You know, if they're gonna, you know, run a sluggo where they're, you know, faking slant and then going up, right? Does it look the same always as when he runs a slant? Like those are, you know, where you sort of get like tips of the trade type thing. Linebacker is another one like that. Safety can be that, but like defensive linemen, wide receivers, running back, like it's not a big deal. It's really not a big deal.
I feel like defensive backs, if you can get a tell from a corner or sorry, from a wide receiver and or like the quarterback, if he gives certain tells and certain things where his eyes go, like all those things can be a little bit more important. But I do definitely think it's a lot more position specific on if, you know, watching some of the film at a high level matters or not. Then it would not, especially at age 19 for Tet, a physical freak, super gifted. Not surprising to me that it's like, I'll watch the tape with my coaches when I get in the film room.
I mean, Rasul, when he came to Green Bay after his success that first year, he was basically like, I didn't know how to watch film. Like no one bothered to teach me how to watch film. And he would have been, I mean, the Packers were either his third or fourth NFL team, not including, you know, his college team. And I think he was a JUCO guy too, going up. So he'd been in some rooms, right? So it's not even that like, it's not time on task. Like a lot of these, like some of these guys might have time on task and they don't know what the hell they're doing.
Yeah.
Right. So
when was your first all 22? I'm assuming when you like just in like high school, or when was your first all 22?
We didn't have end zone angle in high school or anything like that. Definitely doing draft stuff. Probably 2013 class.
How did you go about watching all 22 for the first time? Like, did you mostly feel like you knew what you were doing, or like, what was your like just experience of like, I'm going to throw on the all 22. What does this mean? Like, how did you feel watching it for the first time, or like going through the process?
Yeah. So like the easy thing for me, I had played offensive line and defensive line. Those guys for the most part are captured pretty well through broadcast view. So I kind of already knew what I was looking at there. In terms of coverages and stuff like that, you definitely have to get used to what like an NFL athlete looks like from like an evaluation standpoint.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know, you grow up playing like Madden and stuff. So like, I know what cover two looks like, and you know, the angles start to make sense and stuff like that. So, do that, you know, listen to coaches' clinics, like coach football. You learn a little bit more every year, all that stuff. So, wasn't super hard because I already had, you know, pretty stable foundation on like understanding what is going on. Plus, like everyone started running inside zone and all the option stuff because it came from the college level. And like I rooted for Oregon and I saw what Chip was doing. So I was like, oh, everyone else is catching up. Like I haven't already been seeing this for years. So.
I remember the first time, I don't even remember the like exact time frame of when it happened or whatever, but I remember like getting it for the first time and being like, all right, like, I don't know, like maybe I'm just an idiot. Maybe I don't know what I'm, you know, going to be able to like, in to your point, you know, for anyone that's like overwhelmed by it or be like, oh, I want to throw it on, start watching it, and things click very, very quick. And the more that you watch, the more that you learn. And it's a very, I don't know, I find it so much more enjoyable watching the game now that I have access to all 22 and can see the more minutia, the more like see everything develop down the field. But yeah, if anyone's like overwhelmed by it, just if you can find it, and obviously now it's pretty available on NFL Plus. I think they've actually revamped it pretty well.
Oh dude. And like the old all 22.
Oh my God,
dog. It was not, dude, it was grainy. Like you had to really try to figure out who's on the field. If guys were rotating in and out. People got it easy now. I had it uphill both ways in the snow.
You remember the old Chicago Bears all 22 as well?
Horrendous angle.
Horrendous angle.
Yeah, my advice is always if you're trying to learn the sport, listen to coaches' clinics.
It's good advice.
I have a Dropbox with a bunch of stuff in it. If you guys are interested, DM me on either Twitter or Blue Sky. I don't care which one.
Don't do it on Blue Sky because you can't send files in Blue Sky. I guess you're doing the Dropbox.
I'm sending a link. If you guys are interested, hit me up. I'll give you a bunch of coaches clinics that I think are interesting.
Take them up on it. It's worth it. And it's a great way, great way. And there's a bunch of stuff on YouTube you can find as well. That's good.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Definitely worth your time. All right. A couple quick things before we get out of here. We got the Mecole Hardman contract. I had it up here a second ago. All right. So it's 1 year.
I can tell you what it is. It's $150,000 and there's like a workout bonus, but it's $150,000 signing bonus in the league minimum.
Yeah. There you go. It's very much exactly that.
Roster spot is not promised.
No, it is not. And that's exactly what we were sort of expecting going into it. He got zero guarantee for KC last year. So I was expecting something because it seemed like there were maybe a couple teams of interest. Give him a little bit of couch cushion money, $150K to get the incentive for him to sign.
I'll take it. Hey, if that's couch cushion money for you.
No, that's couch cushion money for the Green Bay Packers. It is not for you or I. That is for sure. Couch cushion money for the Packers. They give them that. Like, I mean, you mentioned it before. Teams will hand out $250K to an undrafted free agent that's going to get cut all the time, right? Yeah. Like, this is nothing. And to your point, like, this is not a guarantee that he makes the team at all. He's going to have to earn it in camp, which is exactly what you want from a bottom or like a this stage of free agency signing.
Yeah, I think it's kind of, Joker pool stick. You know, you break it in half and you have them fight it out. I think that's the situation we're looking at with Mecole Hardman and Bo Melton at this point. Kind of doubt that they would keep both of them just off of like how they construct that wide receiver room. It's a little redundant to have kind of both of them.
Well, if you start getting into it, like to your point from earlier, if you've got Jaden Reed, Bo Melton, and Mecole Hardman all on your team, like it starts to get a little bit of an issue if you want to run the offense the way that you want to run it.
As Goot says, you get small in a hurry. Yeah, I think he's going to come in, probably compete for like the punt returner spot, and then, you know, maybe wide receiver 4, 5, 6, depending on what happens in the draft and training camp and all that stuff. But, you know, could play some snaps. Could also be gone at cutdowns. Like, I wouldn't be shocked by either.
Bo Melton, Mecole Hardman, training camp 2025. Be there. It's going to be epic. The battle that everyone wants to see.
And Jair watch. Daily Jair watch.
Oh, my goodness. It needs to be done before that. And then, obviously, the other one, I don't think we've got the contract yet, but I'm expecting vet minimum. Christian Welch is back. Everyone's favorite former Packers special teams linebacker. Contract is not out there. This is another one of those back of the roster special teams guys. No harm, no foul. Why not? He's literally the fifth linebacker on the roster. There is nobody else. There's no unknown reserve futures guy that they picked up after the season. There are five guys. He's one of them. Four of them are guaranteed to make the team, and Hopper, McDuffie, Cooper, and Quay. And then he's number five, which, by the way, I'm looking at it right now. Over the Cap has him listed as a fullback on their roster for some reason. So I don't know why, but there's that.
That's weird. Welch, I actually thought Welch had a decent chance of making the team last season. I thought because Green Bay was playing the 4-3 defense that they would have rostered more linebackers than they ended up doing. They only ended up keeping five guys. Not surprised he went back to Baltimore, right?
He went to Denver and then Baltimore.
Yeah. So he had been in Baltimore and played special teams and stuff for him. Had a pretty good preseason. The Packers were in a kind of a weird spot this past year. You know, Raylan Goforth was kind of supposed to be like their practice squad guy, and he ended up getting injured. Right. So, you know, that whole developmental pipeline of those practice squad guys never really ended up panning out, which is why you don't have a guy on a reserve futures deal right now. Just helps you cover your ass a little bit. You're probably several injuries away from him having to actually play defense. At the same time, played half decent in the preseason last year. So maybe he does beat out a Tyron Hopper. Who knows?
Got that big preseason interception last year that had everyone, I think, believing he was going to make the team, and then he did not. And it was a big to-do, and then it really ended up not mattering whatsoever. But 237 special team snaps, one defensive snap for Green Bay in 2023. Played 324 special team snaps last year for Denver and Baltimore combined. Has played almost 1,500 special team snaps in his career. So that's where he is going to make his money. He is 20
relatively something. Young. He's like 4 years in or something.
He's 27 years old. So
is he, yeah. How many years, how many accrued seasons does he have?
He played, this will be his sixth, actually.
He might have signed like a veterans benefits deal. Like
gets a little bit more, but costs Green Bay less.
Well, it doesn't hit the cap.
Yes. Like I only care about, I do not care what comes out of Green Bay's bank account at whatsoever. Whatever comes out of their, you know, their credit union is, it does not matter to me. It only matters to me what counts against the cap. So I know it's not always the most holistic way to look at it, but I only care about what counts against the cap forever and ever. Amen. Yeah. I think those are all the things I wanted to go over. Anything I'm missing? Anything you wanted to go over?
We're running the mock drafts again.
No quarterbacks this time?
Huh?
No quarterbacks this time?
No quarterback votes, but it looks like Derek Harmon's going to win for the third straight time, the way I'm looking at it right now. If you guys look at the Packers mock draft 3.0 voting, by the time you guys listen to this, it'll probably be the second round. Mike Green is still available on the board. Our people have not picked a defensive end in either of the first two mocks. We're doing the first through third rounds. Our people haven't voted to take a defensive end yet. I'm shocked by it. Mike Green is available for the first time. I think they're passing on Mike Green, and they're just going to keep drafting Derek Harmon. Are we just announcing Derek Harmon as
my question pick? My question for you is, which version of this happens? Derek Harmon goes one pick before Green Bay selects at pick 23, or he is there, and then they take a completely different defensive tackle that nobody saw coming, and then he's, you know, and then he becomes a, you know, Pro Bowl defensive tackle, and then Green Bay took the one that was worse, and everyone the whole time is like, Derek Harmon was standing, it was where he was right there for you. There's only two ways this goes, Justice. Either he's past Green Bay and he ends up being a star, or he goes one pick before Green Bay. Those are the only two ways this goes.
Well, the other two defensive tackles in that range I like too, so I wouldn't hate that. I like Kenneth Grant. Definitely a different player, more of a nose tackle. Tyreek Williams, really like him. Think he has more pass rush juice than people give him credit for. He's another guy who's very good as a, you know, run stopper. I think he can play one or three. So I'll take it. I'll take a defensive lineman in the first round.
Are you talking to Tyler Brook again, by the way, as well?
I am, as a special guest. We actually argued we're both special guests because we can't be official hosts.
So you're both co-guesting.
We're co-guesting. Draft Talk on the Frozen Tundra Frequencies podcast feed. This past week we broke down defensive ends on the podcast. More in depth on, you know, some of those positional players. And then I think this week we're gonna talk about wide receivers and a little bit of some of the visits. So yeah, catch me on there as a special guest and not a host, because Vox won't let me have a podcast anymore. So
if you need somebody to host, I will come on for the first 30 seconds of the show and open the show and host the show, and then, you know, just bow out and say, all right, you know, from here the two special guests are taking over now that my hosting duties are done.
It was actually Tex Western. Tex Western's the real host on that podcast. His mic just cut out.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Real quiet. He's shy. So
it's classic Tex. Awesome. Well, I appreciate you a ton. Go check out, two of my favorite people to listen to, Tyler and Justice. So make sure you check them out, Talking Draft, as two very special guests. And then, follow Justice at AcmePackingCompany .com. And then, of course, on social media at JUMOSQ. Anything else you want to plug on the way out?
If you guys want those clinics, hit me up because I'll send them to you. I don't care. Like you've seen me tweet out NFL playbooks on the timeline before. So like, you guys want to learn about clinics and stuff like that, I'll send you some good ones. I promise.
Make sure to do so. You're gonna have to get that blue check mark just to be able to DM Justice. Do it on Blue Sky, right? Do it on Blue Sky. Easy way to do it. Follow him at JUMOSQ. Hit him up for those playbooks, or sorry, the seminars, I should say. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for Justice and I today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.